right, everybody. Welcome back once again to the Film Buffs podcast. I'm Dan, and I'm here with Jono today.
Hello.
Alex won't be joining us. He is involved with some casting for a music video at the moment, so it's just Jono and I today. And today, to follow up on our last discussion of Bird Box, we're going to talk about A Quiet Place, directed by John Krasinski, starring John Krasinski and Emily Blunt. I saw this movie in theaters, and I absolutely loved it. Jono, I know this was your first time watching it this week, so why don't we start with you? How'd you like it?
I enjoyed it way more than I enjoyed Bird Box, because I didn't enjoy Bird Box. I thought it was terrible. So this was definitely, to have seen that and then to watch this and know that there are kind of similarities with that whole like senses thing and some type of ominous monster that's out there waiting to pounce. I thought that I was in the mood to be impressed and have a one-up experience over Bird Box. So I did enjoy the film for that reason. But it wasn't perfect. What are your thoughts on it?
Oh, man. I really enjoyed this film. When I saw it in the theater, structurally, I knew where all the scares were coming. I was mentally prepared for them in a way, but still, they got me every single time. And I was so tense and so worked up that with 20 minutes left in the film, I turned to my friend in the theater and I said, "Is this almost over? Because I can't handle much more of this." It was it was pretty intense. But I think this is a really, really fantastic thriller, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it was. I thought it was pretty good in the sense that like it kept me on my toes, and I thought there were a lot of jump scares in it, which I always kind of I guess it's obviously going to happen in a thriller, but I don't necessarily appreciate those every time they happen. I kind of think they can be a bit, there were a lot of them, so I kind of was like, ooh, is this on the borderline of cheap jump scares? But for the most part, like I thought it was good. And when you become familiar with a monster in a film, I'm terrible with these types of movies, that I'm the same as you, but when you kind of become familiar with it and you're like, oh, okay, I've seen it now, I'm more comfortable with the fact that I know what's out there, but it's still scary.
Yeah.
That kind of eases me a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And this monster was particularly interesting and all that stuff with it being, you know, totally blind, but using sound to find its victims and all that jazz. So I thought it was overall pretty well structured. I liked what they did with the monster. I did think that there were kind of a few too many jump scares for me, I guess. But overall, I thought it was pretty well-structured, well-done film, and it was cool.
Cool. What did you think of the lack of dialogue?
Obviously, when movies do this kind of stuff, I always really appreciate if they can pull it off and it doesn't become boring.
Yeah.
Which is great. I mean, I didn't mind it at all. I think it's awesome. It's kind of the same thing with the Castaway. In the fact that there's basically no dialogue throughout the entire, I guess, second act of that film,
yeah,
or more, so it's and no music as well. So there's all this just relying on facial expression. So I think they did a really good job, like keeping the tension, obviously, but also developing characters without dialogue is really tough to do.
Yeah, thought it was amazing. It was entirely visual storytelling, which is the exact opposite of Bird Box, actually, because, you know, Bird Box, it starts out with that huge bit of exposition where she tells the kids who have been only growing up in the world of don't look at anything. She tells them explicitly again what they need to do, right? Like,
yeah,
you get the rules of the movie right at the top of the film. And this one, you are eased into it, right? You kind of, what I thought was really neat is that you set up with the opening shot. It's a traffic light that's fallen on the ground, and you get right away, this is kind of like a post-apocalyptic thing, you know, order and it is gone. And then they're tiptoeing around in the store, which to me was kind of reminiscent of like this child's game of hide and go seek, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So they set everything up and there's absolutely no exposition. There's no fat on this film. It's just all done in the behavior of the actors. So I thought it was brilliant in that sense.
Yeah, it was. I thought overall, like, there were a lot of really great things going for it that did things very, very well. Again, the lack of dialogue and being able to convey emotion, and obviously, you know, build relationships and develop the characters through that is pretty tough to do. And yeah, like, they keeping the mystery alive in a film like that is at the same time and keeping the story and characters interesting is a really cool thing that they did quite well in that. You know, like, it has a very, each the characters all had a really interesting you know, through line throughout the movie. They all had their own kind of path, and I thought it was, they all converged really well at the end. And there was the daughter, for me, was a bit of a, you know, frustrating character and sometimes unbelievable.
In what sense?
But towards the end, with her, just to jump right up there, it's just with her figuring out what's going on, it's like, okay, now you're just kind of, it, when you feel like things have been dragged out just slightly illogically, you hate the character a little bit. You're like, okay, you're responsible for two deaths in the family now, because you can't freaking pick up on the fact that when this thing is around, you had three chances. The first one's understandable. You didn't know it was behind you. The second time, it's like this thing that just relentlessly kills absolutely everything disappears when you can finally hear, and it freaks out, and you watch that. And then the second time, you see it come in, and you turn it off, and then you realize that it's all good in the hood for that monster, and then it kills your dad. And then the third time, you're just standing there, or the fourth time, you're just standing there waiting with mom, just trying to, like, just thinking about life and, like, looking at whiteboards for dad's little notes that were a little bit too obvious, like, monster, weakness, blah, blah, blah. I was just like, okay. Like, you are just a frustrating character, and I don't care if you succeed at this point. Like, you should have figured this out by now. Like, you should be dead, not your dad. Like, that,
okay,
for me...
Wow.
That for me just drove me insane. I was just like, okay, you're just pushing the, you made this character a bit of an idiot so they can push the tension. And I'm sorry, I know she's, I'm
No, don't apologize, it's awesome. I've never heard anyone talk about it like that.
I don't know, it's just these thrillers love to do this, but sometimes it's just like, it's the same thing. It's like, no, don't go in there.
Right.
But this isn't a teen movie. This is a smart movie. And I thought there was so much smart stuff going on. I was like, the drag out there for me was just a little bit too much. And I'd be like, I don't want to dislike this girl.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to dislike her for that. Anyways.
That's great. Oh, man, that's so funny.
Yeah, but I did really like it and a lot. I'm not ragging on it entirely. I thought it was pretty sweet. The baby birthing scene. Did you find anything that, obviously that was a big thing that kind of brought people into the movies, like, oh man, this is going to be intense. Did you find any of that to be, I had some questions after that, but give me your thoughts on that.
Well, I mean, as a scene, I thought it was incredibly intense. Like, it was done really, really well. But then once the baby is born, though, I just kept thinking, oh my gosh, this is the most well-behaved baby in the world.
A little bit too well-behaved. I mean,
a little bit too well-behaved, yeah. Just never, ever cries.
Do any babies come out of... I mean, I'm not a father, and I've never... I can't speak to this, and I won't try to, but... Does that ever happen where, like, in a world where no sound is happening, how do you manage that? Don't most babies come out making some kind of noise?
I thought it was always a good sign that a baby cried when it was born.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, but I mean, they get you around it in a sense with, like, the well, also, that was an incredibly quick labor.
It was, yeah, good,
like,
for her.
It was like, yeah, good, yeah, good on her.
Yeah, maybe in those moments
she really got through it in like 5 minutes.
Yeah, by herself. Super short labor. Seemed like fine. She's shooting a shotgun within 24 hours. It's pretty solid.
Yeah. So that is a miracle birth and baby right there.
Yeah. That for me, that was another kind of
shotgun within 24 hours.
Most people are like Victoria's Secret models just had a baby and she was on the runway within 3 months.
Yeah.
It's like, wow. Well, this person was shooting monsters
the next day
with a 12 gauge shotgun.
Yeah.
It was less than 24 hours. This was within like 5 hours.
That was awesome. The movie technically takes place. Well, it's over. What is it? It's over a year and a half, I think, from the very first scene till we see them again. But then those last two are you basically get the whole movie in 2 days.
Yeah, essentially.
Because I think
is it? Oh yeah,
I think so, because it says it's like day 472, and then I think it's 473.
Yeah. So I can't remember the dates at the beginning. How far in were they at the very start? Was it day 80 something?
Yeah, something like that. I
for some reason thought that she was pregnant before the incident, like the monsters came to light. But she wasn't. She got pregnant while this whole thing was going down.
That's what I gathered from it as well.
Well, she would have had to have been doing the math.
Yeah.
Now that I know that.
I mean, hey, I'm happy to be wrong on the math. That's never been my strong suit. But anyways, I thought it was about a year and a half later from the day that the boy is killed at the beginning.
Which means that she got pregnant during the time.
Yeah.
Man. They needed to do a better job. No more kids. No more kids. At least for a while.
Well, at least until you figured that out, man. Like,
man, yeah.
Oh, jeez. Anyway, I thought the birthing scene was adequately intense. It seemed pretty like a pretty horrific experience to deal with all the fear
doubt.
And then all the emotion and all the trauma of what a birth could be. But yeah.
So I guess that she. But in that scene, though, like as she's having contractions, they set off the fireworks. So
yes.
She's able to manage all of that.
Yeah.
During that time. Okay. That I knew that, but I was like, wouldn't they like the fireworks don't last that long? So again, very quick birth, and the baby would have made some noise. And there are some questionable moments in that. But overall, again, I come back to the characters and stuff like that. I thought they were all pretty good.
Yeah.
You know? Like there's that great bonding moment between father and son at the waterfall, and you kind of get like this some perspective, and the daughter's kind of going through a rebellious stage basically at the worst time ever, at the end of the world where monsters are on the loose.
Teenagers, huh? But they never change.
They never change, no. And then, so, like, the daughter's obviously struggling. You like her. I like her at the beginning. She's like, oh, she's the nice sisters. Like, she wants the kids to have fun. But then she, of course, gives the batteries to, or doesn't, gives the toy to the kid.
Yeah.
And he gets the batteries and dies. So she feels responsible for that. And then her running away is actually visiting her brother's grave. So, I mean, you get these kind of very compassionate characters who are relatively well layered and interesting, I thought. But I thought that was a nice redeeming thing for the daughter when she goes to do that. I actually thought she was running away or potentially following them or something like that and going to get them into trouble.
Yeah.
But every character had a good turns and stuff like that throughout the film.
Yeah.
Which is good. Which is in these types of movies not super common.
One of the things that I really liked about the movie is, especially compared to Bird Box, is that you see that they are aware and they're doing everything within their power to figure out what this is, how to survive in the world and deal with these monster situations, right? I know you made fun of the notes and everything of the dad, but I still kind of appreciated that, and it just that it shows you the effort that they're going through to figure out how to deal with the problem. Like, they know how many monsters they are. They know they have armor. They know they're attracted to sound, but they can't see. So they have all of the pieces except for the final one, that the high sonic frequency is their weakness. But I also like the fact that, so it shows that they're aware and they're learning. They're not, closing their eyes and refusing to look at the problem and address the problem.
Yeah.
But I like that they have the boy, remember the scene where he's doing math with his mom and he wants to stay there and kind of be a mama's boy. And his dad said, it's time to go. And she says, you have to go because you have to learn how to take care of yourself and then learn how to take care of me. And I like the fact that he's afraid and that he's encouraged to continue to go and face his fear and to learn more as he goes about the fear, right? Because then his dad takes him to the waterfall and teaches him one more thing that he needs to know, that the monsters only hear the sounds that are, how do you say it, not part of the environment, right? The sounds that really stand out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
they're washed out by other sounds, they're good.
Yeah, exactly. So I like that he's afraid, and I like that there's that tension of like, I don't want to do this, but there's still that call to action and to growing up and says, no, you have to, man. Like, you got to figure this out because we don't know if we're ever going to be able to figure it out. So you have to learn to cope in this world as well. So I like that.
Yeah. And that was like the daughter not being allowed to go. I think that was an interesting thing too. Cause like most people are like, oh, give her a chance to go, like, kind of thing. Right. Like, but she doesn't need that lesson. The boy does.
Yeah. She is not afraid like he is. Like, she's already found her courage. She's older than him. And so for her, it's not about stepping across that barrier of facing your fear. It's like she's willing to do it already, so she's good. She knows what she needs to know in some aspect. So this is specifically the boy's lesson, which I thought was cool.
Yeah, and she has her own lessons as well that he actually recognizes in hers throughout the film, right?
Yeah.
Where she needs to smarten up and start figuring out when the sound is the problem. Or the solution. But she has her own lessons to learn, and like her stubbornness and getting over that. I mean, like, there's a lot of tension built up with all those characters, right? Which is really good. You want them to push through something. Whereas with Bird Box, we never really get that. We kind of get this like loose, like, I've learned everything now at the end, you know? Like, yeah. And in this one, you actually, you don't feel for her. You just like that you realize like what you're feeling throughout the film is just intensity of like, when is something bad going to happen?
Yeah.
Not like, is what this character's going through and learning now and trying to push past this problem they're trying to solve that's going to develop their character. Is that like going to work out?
Yeah.
Right. And that's more genuine. That's a more genuine feeling and viewing experience. Like, we're watching John, is it Krasinski? I always forget. It is,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, just call him Jim. Watching Jim from The Office.
Let's just call him Jim from The Office.
Yeah.
Yeah, where Jim from The Office is like, he's got his thing too, right? Like, he needs to, like, his wife wants him to basically make sure that the kids are always okay. And that's what his ultimate, like, goal is constantly. And he's not succeeding at it necessarily. Until the end, when he ultimately sacrifices himself, right? He has like these failing moments, but it's always something he's trying to fix and get better, right? Like, even the small things with getting her hearing aids up and running, right? Like, constantly working through that. And then realizing that he needs to, like, he has to do the ultimate sacrifice and the ultimate solution, which is saying goodbye to himself to do what his wife asked of him, right? Like, to be a good father, he has to save his kids, right?
Yes, to protect them. Which I thought makes the sacrifice that much more meaningful, right? Because, you know, in Bird Box, the guy dies so that they can get away, but they don't learn anything that makes them better, right? But in this one, he's taught them everything that they need to know to survive in the world. plus laid the groundwork for them to figure out how to win, right? Because all of his research is what ultimately leads to them discovering the key to defeating these monsters. So right. When he dies, he's allowing them to become adults, essentially.
Yeah, and I thought it was all quite powerful stuff, like, for the most part. Again, like, there were my frustrations are still there, but, like, I get it. It was done in the for the sake of making the characters more interesting, pushing that turn in the character to the breaking point, right?
Like, yeah.
And so it makes sense. It's frustrating. It's to me, it doesn't make enough sense, I think, from a logical point of view. But again, I understand, like, I think it's the right thing to do from a storytelling perspective. It works. It got me all worked up. I was like, this kid's an idiot. but she's like a decent character who has like a full arc, and so does everybody else for the most part, right? Like, it's more about him, like John and her's arcs for sure.
Yeah.
And the other characters are kind of supporting those and moving through the story with that, and, you know, pushing and also contributing to obviously some of the more iconic moments in the film with like the birth in the bathtub.
Mm-hmm.
But like overall, like I thought that they did a good job of being a character focused film. And the monsters are really just something to launch off of for developing the characters more, right?
Yeah.
As opposed to Bird Box, which was just this nothing. I mean, like, you could argue that they focus more on the characters, but they don't.
They do not.
At all. They no. don't fo- They don't focus on them at
Nobody
all.
Nobody learns anything in that movie.
Yeah. The more I look back at that film and like if we're doing a mirror analysis here of the two films or facing them off against each other or whatever, this is Bird Box just like doesn't do anything with the characters. Nothing's used in that film to learn anything special or like have the character go through an interesting journey. It's just like, let's get from A to B and then the next safe place. And this film, it's like you never feel like the safe place is what they need to get to. What they need to do is deal with the problem.
Well, yeah, because even their safe place, you know, the home, which is generally a safe place, is constantly under threat from any sort of sound. You know, when the lamp goes over at the dinner at the beginning, like, you can't even be in your own home and be safe from these things.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that ever-present danger. You know, there's no such thing as a safe place there.
Yeah. The more I think about Bird Box and this film and like comparing the two, the more I just become like, how did Bird Box pick up?
I don't know, man. I read a bunch of reviews of that, and a lot of the critical reviews were pretty bad. Most people did not, at least the critic reviews didn't give it much praise. I think the only really kind of positive one that I saw was on Ebert and Ropert, surprisingly. But yeah, I don't know.
Well, Ebert's not there anymore, so, you know.
Right. What is apart. It? Yeah. He was the old guy with white hair, right?
He was, yeah. He was the more prominent figure in that duo.
Yeah.
Wait. Was it? No, was he? Oh, crap.
I think so. I don't know.
Roger Ebert?
Roger Ebert.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, he was. He was the more prominent.
And whoever
I actually can't even put a face to the name of the other guy.
Yeah, I thought the other guy was younger, at least when I saw it. But I can't really remember. It's been so long since that was on the air.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if I ever saw that.
I have a question about scary movies and thrillers. What is so scary about Korn?
Well, that's another fascinating point, because like, well, especially in this film, I wonder if they do this kind of intentionally. I guess like Korn has kind of become this,
yeah, cornfields are always like these, like,
they're horrifying places
of scary things. Like, I don't know, I had a cornfield when I was a kid. Yeah, it wasn't that scary.
You had a cornfield?
Well, not like a huge, massive one like in this movie, but, you know.
You had a little section. Yeah, I remember that.
I've been to like a cornfield. And
I think that's the thing. Most people have at least once in their life been to a cornfield or a corn maze, I guess. Or you can at least identify with the fact that being engulfed in corn plants is like the most like one of the more claustrophobic, lost feelings you can have in nature, I guess, or not in a farm setting.
In a farm setting.
At least. It's like you do not want to get caught in a cornfield. That is scary stuff.
Scary stuff, man.
But it is like if you think about it, it's like you can really lose it. So it's a pretty easy way to that's one of the things like I was like, why? Why in all of the places to actually be safe would you park yourself in a corn farm that's the worst place. It's the noisiest thing you could possibly walk through. Say you are running from something and you have to get you have to beeline it out of there from one of these monsters, and you accidentally take a left turn into the cornfield like the boy does. It's like you're screwed. It's like you're the noisiest thing in the world.
Yeah.
You have no idea what direction you're going in. What a stupid place to call your little quiet place.
Also, hang on a minute. What kind of family of four needs that much corn? That was like acres and acres of corn there.
Are they even using it? They eat fish mostly.
I don't know, but
because
corn's just not going to grow on its own like that. Like, that was well planted and tended corn.
I don't think they could plant and tend that corn. That's the thing. It's so noisy. I guess maybe it is. Maybe it isn't, because it would be considered part of the, like, if it's a windy day and the corn is blowing, maybe they can go and cultivate it or something like that. I don't know. What do you think?
They didn't really explain that. Corn is really loud. Like, even just shucking corn, like pulling the husk off of corn, is not exactly a quiet activity.
I know, and then all of a sudden, like, you're getting pounced. Like, you'll be like, oh, I'm shucking some corn here, and then all of a sudden, like, bam, out of... But it is maybe the other... Like, I was kind of thinking about that. I was like, why are they living in this place? Like, that doesn't seem like a smart idea. Like, basically, these things could be in the cornfield at any point, and they'll never know. But maybe it was... I thought, like, maybe it's possible that they did that, too, because they can get the second floor view from the house of like and see what's going on, like see movement through it, I guess, because they use that a lot in the film to like show that they are in pursuit, or at least a couple times, right?
Yeah, the high and wide shot.
So I think that that might have been a choice, I guess, from the director to be able to create some interesting shots that show that they're basically going to be attacked. But other than that, it seemed like a silly choice. Yeah. It's probably just the children of the corn thing. It's just an influence.
Yeah, but where does it come from? Like, I don't know. I want to know where this comes from, that corn is a scary, like, cornfields are scary places to be.
I imagine a cranberry field could be pretty scary, especially when it's got all that water.
There you go. Like, you're in a bog there.
Yeah. Well, maybe somebody should do a horror movie
in a cranberry
thriller
field.
Where they're in a cranberry field.
Speaking of cranberry fields, did you ever see the Red Bull video where they do the wakeboarding through the cranberry field?
It was beautiful. Very well done.
Yeah.
Yes, I saw it.
That was really cool.
Visually stunning.
Yeah.
See, that's the thing. Yeah, I guess, it's not that scary. It's kind of cool. Unless it's like cranberry sharks.
Cranberry sharks. Well, these...
Then they're contained.
Then they're contained. Then they're just in the bog and you don't go swimming in the cranberry field.
Yeah.
But we love it so much. We have to swim in the cranberry field. It's a tradition.
If these monsters would leave the cranberry field, we'd have a real crisis on our hand, but everything's fine.
They're contained. They're dependent on the cranberry field to be flooded.
They love they love flooded cranberry fields. Yeah, I don't know. I can't say that I understand that whole premise either. Again, I think it's just like it's an easy place to create some scary scenes. Like as soon as the boy disappears into the cornfield, you're like, he's probably a goner.
Maybe it's because it's tall and it like inhibits your vision.
Well, it does. It's everything. It's like it, but that's true. It's like in Signs and all that stuff, right? Yeah. Like
there's so many thriller films with corn.
Yeah.
You wonder why children don't want to eat vegetables, man.
Yeah.
Keep scaring them with them.
Yeah, well, I mean, broccoli doesn't have any movies, and people hate that.
Yeah, well.
Does it? Is there a broccoli, a movie around broccoli? No, there probably isn't.
Mm.
There should be. We're tapping into all of these.
Yeah, I think that's the next one, a broccoli field.
Films. Yeah. Somebody needs to change this up. Anyways.
Yeah, let's get some variety in our thriller movies. Let's move it from the cornfield to the broccoli patch.
I'm sure somebody in Hollywood has met on that at some point. It's like, I'm so sick of seeing cornfields. Can we try something else? Like, I don't know, raspberries? It's like, people love raspberries.
No. The audience will never buy that fruit is scary.
Berries are off limits.
Stick to the vegetables, damn it.
The corn industry is doing fine. We don't need... We don't need to scare people off of berries. Anyway, other than that, though, yeah, great film overall, I thought. So it was good.
How'd you like the ending?
I thought that as a duo, Emily Blunt and Jim from The Office, they're great on camera. Sometimes you get those couples
that
end up starring in a movie together, and you're just like, oh, the whole time. Like freaking Spider-Man, The Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Yeah.
Andrew Garfield
and Emma Stone.
And Emma Stone together. It's just like,
yeah.
Like dating
like
in real life.
Brad Pitt did not Mr. and Mrs. Smith with Angelina. That was sort of as they got together. But they did one recently about some house on the water. And it wasn't reviewed very well. Well, I know they're not together anymore, but... Ben Affleck did one. Like I think he was in Geely with Jennifer, with J-Lo.
He did two movies with the girls that he ended up
that's right, yeah.
Marrying. He did, yeah. I can't remember what it was called.
He was in Daredevil.
Daredevil, yeah.
That was a terrible Daredevil. Film altogether.
I never saw it.
Really?
I don't think so. I might have, but there
was
some
bad,
movies.
Man. It was really
You know what?
Stupid.
I watched... sometimes you just forget you've seen a movie, and like I watched The Shawshank Redemption the other day, and I was like, oh, I've been meaning to see this, and I'm like, oh, I think I've seen it like two times already.
It's very possible.
But I love it. Like, it was really good. It's a super good movie, obviously. But there's an interesting film, interesting background too. Apparently it didn't do very well when
it
came out. It did terribly.
Terribly. Yeah, I was listening to, there's a podcast called Unspooled, and they talk about the top 100 films on the AFI list, and they did Shawshank, and they broke it all down. So if you guys are interested in Shawshank, you can head over to Unspooled and have a listen there. They do a great job talking about that film.
Yeah, I read up on that quite a bit. It was fascinating. The people who could have been in it, the reasons why it didn't do well in the box office, and then how it got this kind of weird meteoric rise because of the guy who ended up buying the rights to it, ended up putting it on TV a bunch.
Yeah.
Basically licensed it out, and it made, like, it just became super popular because people kept seeing it on TV, and all of a sudden it got this incredible exposure.
Yeah.
Like a year later or something like that.
Yeah, it took a while to generate some following, but it was just one of those things that was constantly on, and so people kept watching it.
But it's a really good movie, though.
It is, yeah.
I loved it. Watching it again, I was like, oh, yeah, I've seen this. But it's really enjoyable.
I guess it was probably about 10 years ago now. I had this friend, and she gave me the movie, and the card said, a classic movie for a classic guy. That's clever. I like that.
That's nice.
Not even that clever, I guess. It was just funny.
I think I saw it in high school, but I also remember seeing the poster in the media department a ton.
That's right, yeah. Wow,
yeah.
The good old
good
days,
poster.
Huh? Yeah.
The posters have changed. Anyways, yeah, sorry, off track. But yes, A Quiet Place, fantastic stuff there. Good characters and all that jazz.
Yeah. How did you like the ending when they finally figured out what the problem is, and then they they look in the monitor and they see the other two monsters coming toward the house, and then it just like the camera drifts up to Emily Blunt. She has the look of realization on her face as she just cocks the shotgun and it cuts to black.
Yeah. I thought that was great. Yeah, overall, like I thought the movie was super well paced and like really good, and like that kind of ending as well was, I kind of like stuff being left on a note like that.
It's yeah, like, oh, absolutely.
Cool. I mean, a lot of most good stories kind of do leave that stuff open, right? Shawshank yeah. not being one of them, actually, is a good example of a film that didn't end on that, like, well, what could have happened?
No, they tie it all together.
They actually have the scene at the end where they meet up. But in this, like, you know, leaving the audience, you know, to finish the story off for themselves, it's always a really good thing. I thought that was a really cool shot too. Like everything, it's like, it was a nice build up to that whole moment. It's like, sweet, they finally got a solution. Yeah. But again, that's what Bird Box again didn't do, which it didn't give us a good wrap up and like, here's the solution to the problem that's been driving the plot.
Yeah. I am their mother. Kemma drifts up to the open sky where they could still see the monsters through the trees.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But in this case, the thing I liked about it too is it's not focused on that problem. You kind of realize that in moments like that where it's like, okay, our characters have come full circle. Good.
Yeah.
We don't need a shoot 'em up scene, right? Like we just needed that stuff there.
Exactly. Like we're searching for the key to survival. We're searching for how to win this fight the whole time. We finally got it. We killed one of them. And we know we can win now. Bam. That's all you need.
Whereas Bird Box doesn't really do any of those things. It doesn't give you like, okay, we're gonna face these monsters and have like a, you know, here's our epic solution. But it also doesn't really give us a good character focus. It's just kind of like all these ideas getting thrown around about like, you know, protecting yourself and your eyes and like not facing... you know, just getting to the next safe place. This is a really good example of, you know, where everything that's on screen and every beat that we hit is in the right place.
Yeah,
kind of thing, right?
I feel like the movie was so well written that, like I said at the beginning, there's no fat on this film. They just give you only what you need to know, and then only what the characters need to know, and that's it. I thought it was great. Yeah.
I did too. I really enjoyed it overall for a thriller and someone who doesn't really care for thrillers.
Speaking of that, I have a story that I would like to tell. it's a bit funny for Jono, but so Jono's never liked thrillers, and John, you'll remember this day.
I know exactly what you're about to say.
Okay, good.
I was going to make a joke about this last week, but I never ended up doing it.
Okay, well, I want to tell the story because I think it's hilarious. So I think it was about 2003. Jono and I are about 14, 15 years old, I think, at the time. And the Johnny Depp movie, Rear Window?
Secret Window.
Secret Window, yeah. Rear Window is the Jimmy Stewart film, the Hitchcock film. Secret Window was out, and I had rented it, and I had seen the film a few times and really liked it. But Jono hated thrillers. So I put it on, and I fell asleep. And I woke up a little while later, and... the movie wasn't on, but Jono was watching The Sound of Music instead.
Yeah, that games room had a good amount of movies in there, but for some reason, like when that came, we put that on, and then I saw that you had like zonked out, so I was like, what is the exact opposite of this so I can like completely block out everything that's made me feel intense? And I was like, The Sound of Music. Yeah. it was perfect. I was like, I felt so good after that too. I was like, this is
you can't
nice.
Watch that movie and not feel great.
I don't actually really know why I picked it other than the fact that I was like, yeah, it'll be very pleasant. all of this tension will be relieved by The Hills Are Alive with The Sound of Music. Oh, it was great.
Man, it was so funny to wake up. I don't know how far into the film it was, and you were up watching The Sound of Music instead of Secret Window. It cracked me up. But man, no, you're absolutely right. Like, I think I've told this story before, when Tom and I saw The Grudge. We went with some girls we were dating. Were you there with us?
No, I wasn't. I saw it with on a double date with Riley and his girlfriend at the time and my girlfriend at the time.
Right.
And I
oh, man,
what is
awful.
It about girls? Girls seem
girls
to
love
in
to
high
be
school
scared,
they
man.
They love to be in those scary it's well obviously it's like that like, it's an excuse to hug. But like I've got plenty of other excuses to hug other than watching a
yeah a scary and, movie.
I just don't that's like to me I remember in high school, like in The Grudge and all that stuff, I remember I had a hat that I would specifically bring to movies because it had a wider brim that because my girlfriend at the time loved to watch those movies, and I would just like put that thing down in front of my face, and I remember just, like thinking about it, I was like, I think I spent about $150 on films that I hadn't seen that entire year. I guess I was paying for the dates, and then I was like, I was basically paying for the audio experience.
Yeah.
And I didn't even like that part. That part made me uncomfortable. So I was just like, screw this. Like just gonna wear a hat the whole time. Anyways, you watched The Grudge. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, it's fine. But that summer, it was the same situation. I think we were 16 or something like that. And the girls we were seeing wanted to go to scary movies, so Tom and I thought it'd be great. Yeah, we'll be manly, and they'll hold on to us, and it'll be awesome. And Tom and I were more scared than the girls, man. We went back to his place that night, and we watched Anchorman or some other comedy to try and get the movie out of our minds. And then we went to bed, and we were still so flippin' scared that we slept with the lights on in the same single bed. Two 16-year-old boys, just scared shitless.
That sounds nice.
Oh man, it was awful, and that was the last horror film I ever watched.
Yeah, that was I think that was one of the last ones I saw too. I was not a fan.
Yeah, it's
of
not
them
worth
at all.
It man, not worth it.
It's not. I saw The Ring, I saw The Ring 2, saw The Grudge, there was a couple other ones in there too. Saw.
Yeah.
I actually didn't mind Saw. Like, that's probably the only horror movie that I've ever watched that I was like, that was pretty, like, cool twist that they had in there. It was decent enough for me to be like, okay, I dug that. And then saw Saw 2 in IMAX, and that was the worst thing I've ever done in my life.
Why? Just
I
made it
don't...
that much bigger?
Oh, yeah. It was, like, louder, bigger. It was a very immersive experience, and it's not the type of... it's not the type of...
it was a very immersive experience.
And that's not the kind of movie you want to have an immersive experience
no.
in.
No, that's...
it was like... people falling into pits of syringes. I was like, oh, God, this is terrible. Like,
yeah,
I remember thinking 18-foot like...
18-foot syringes on the screen.
Oh, my God. I was horrified in that film. Oh, man. Anyways, I never saw a Saw movie after that one. It was terrible.
Yeah.
But anyways, this type of movie, I like it. I can get on board with this because like there's actual things going on with it. There's actual plots.
Yeah,
there's
the character development really drives it.
Character development.
And, yeah, story
and that's
arcs
what's
are great.
Really cool. Like I can really appreciate that about these types of films. It's like the writing is really good. And like they're using a lot of they're breaking away from like the conventional stuff that you do see in that they're having relatively silent scenes, right? And like they're successfully using that stuff. To me, it's a good exploration of the art form when you're actually doing that kind of thing. It's highly conceptual, but it's also like a really good challenge in like keeping the story interesting, and I can really respect that. Whereas like you kind of have whatever these general thriller films that are like, okay, so what's the twist going to be? You're kind of looking for a twist.
Yeah.
Whereas in this film, it's like, yeah, I didn't expect the little boy to get killed right off the bat. That's pretty powerful stuff right there.
Yeah, killing a child within the first 10 minutes of a film.
Yeah, totally. And like normally you don't show that kind of stuff even on camera. They show the kid get fully like tackled away, right? Like
you get the wide shot from behind him, and it's really on John Krasinski.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there is like I think they cut to him front, don't they?
You might, yeah, maybe, but I know this scene goes black on John Krasinski as he stops short after the kid gets.
Still, like, overall, they really set up, I've said this already, but they use the horrifying thriller aspect of the film as a platform to actually build characters, and that's what makes it a good movie, you know, as opposed
Absolutely.
To these films that rely on the jump scares and,
yeah,
you know, like, here, we're here,
and
you're
like
here to, you're here to get scared.
Like you said earlier, right, there's the classic, oh my god, what's in there, right? And there's so much overacting in these films most of the time, but there is zero overacting in this film. It's mm-hmm. all done in the behavior of the actors, and it's, you get all the information you need just by watching them interact without dialogue, and I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah. And is this his directorial debut?
No, it's not his debut. I know he did his first film after the first season of The Office, I think. I can't remember the name of the film. So he's directed once or twice before, but I think this was a stellar outing for him as a director.
Oh, for sure. I thought that when I heard that he directed it and starred in it, it's like, okay, wow, this will be interesting to watch. And I think that he killed it. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
But do you think that he's like, how does this happen? Like, how doesn't, you keep hearing about these actors that end up taking on a director role.
Yeah.
Like, is it because they have always kind of been film director, like they've had that goal, or do you feel like they kind of get put into that situation where they're like, oh, well, do you want to like have a crack at a film? Like, we like the way you work on set kind of thing. Like, as an actor, do you think that that's an opportunity that somebody like him
was working towards? TV shows, guys that work on TV shows, you know, for 9 or 10 seasons like they do in The Office, a lot of the actors do get a chance. Well, not a lot of them, but sort of the lead actors will get a chance to direct.
Right.
So they learn a bit that way. But for John Krasinski, I know that he optioned the rights to whatever his first script was because he just really liked the story. And just was able to pull it together and get the funding. And I don't know, I remember watching him do an interview about it. Maybe it was on, did you ever watch Off Camera with Sam Jones?
No. Sounds interesting.
Yeah. It's a Netflix, documentary series where he sits down and he has interviews with actors and, people at the top of their game in various industries, but he was a photographer and director, and he has these really, really great interviews with people, and John Krasinski is one of them. I think the first one was Robert Downey Jr. He has Tony Hawk on one of them and Sarah Silverman, and they just get into their career and they talk about the process of it and how they got to be where they are. So that's a great series, doco series as well, if you want to check that out.
I will.
Yeah. So I don't know. They just there's a lot of actors who don't direct too, you know.
Oh, for sure. I just always kind of find it interesting, the ones that do end up directing. Is it something like they studied film in school and that was one area that they kind of liked, but they were actually like really pursuing an acting career kind of thing. I don't know. It kind of fascinates me. But I mean, obviously the ones that we've seen as of late and reviewed on this podcast, they've done relatively well, right? You know, like A Star Is Born.
Yep.
And then of course this film. I don't know if we've done another one where the lead actor was the director though.
It's possible, but we're into
still.
I don't know. This is episode 16 or something now, so I'm starting to forget some of them.
Yeah, but still, it was. I thought, it was a great. When you see something like that, you see something that's obviously well written and it has good flow. The director's choices in that obviously played a part. So it's like to see that him do well and do a good job on camera too. I imagine it's very, very difficult. So,
man, I did a short film recently, and I wrote it, I directed it, produced it, and I did a very small role in it. I think I had like six lines, but I had to do one scene, and no, two lines. Very, very short scene. But to be in it and to think like an actor and to try and manage being a director as well, man, it's not an easy thing. So you really got to have people that you work with that you really trust for the shots and the cinematography, and whoever is assisting you has to be on their game just as much as you do, because it's very, very hard to set up a scene, direct it, and then get in it, be an actor, but then give another actor feedback at the same time as well.
Yeah, I was thinking, like when you're actually in the scene as well, to be cognizant of everything that's going on around you, to be acting, all trying to stay in character, but also, you know, trying to like read what the other actors are doing and get what you want out of the scene as well as out of yourself.
Yeah.
I could imagine that being an incredibly challenging process, right? Like to be concentrating on trying to get the whole thing to come together while also your performance is a huge part of that.
Yeah.
You have to be very, you have to be able to process a lot while also concentrating on every aspect of what you're doing. I was watching a Nicolas Cage thing recently. This is a little off topic, but just about the acting portion of it.
Mm-hmm.
The amount, like, there was a, I've mentioned this YouTube channel a couple of times, Wisecrack. They do philosophy of films kind of stuff. And they did a thing about Deeper Dumb with Nicolas Cage stuff. And the amount of, like, they bring up some interviews where he's talking about his process, and as weird and kind of out there and also kind of stupid as he's perceived, or, like, ridiculous as he's perceived, he actually is, like, doing quite a, or he's taking quite an artistic approach to the way he does stuff. So to be able to, and in one scene, can't remember what movie it is, but he's, like, he speaks about, like, how every body movement was so planned out by him. Like, he knew what he wanted to do, how he wanted to execute his, everything from his arms going in the air to the way his posture was and the way he was moving his legs and hips and everything. He was, like, every part of that was supposed to be this way. And it's, like, to be able to be so conscious of that but also running something on set and making sure everything's coming together, that must be so hard.
It is hard. And like I it's just on Nicolas Cage. I saw a quote by another actor that said Nick Cage is the first person to do something original with acting since Marlon Brando. So
yeah, that was that same quote was used in this video too. He's the that's kind of the thing, is like when method acting came out, he kind of took on that approach, but then he quickly became bored of it essentially and felt that it wasn't really anything special. So he kind of has taken, he's kind of taken this new route where he's very experimental and almost over the top, but not quite, like kind of like teetering on the edge of that. Like he's just this kind of ridiculous,
very, very free in what he does. Like his choices and his decisions are always so like he's, it's almost ridiculous, but there's so much freedom for him to express himself in all of his performances. So it's really, really, I know he's done some bum films lately, but if you look back at some of his earlier stuff, he's a really good actor. Have you seen Adaptation?
Yeah. Years ago.
Yeah. What was the one? Leaving Las Vegas. He won Best Actor for, he plays an alcoholic. He's phenomenal.
I didn't know that he played I didn't know he got a Best Actor award. Interesting.
Yeah, you should watch that.
Actually watching this stuff, like if you watch like the best 100 lines of Nicolas Cage, all out of context, they're hilarious.
Yeah, of course.
But like, and in some cases it's intentional, in some cases not. But like he's definitely this, like he's on a different level. And I actually kind of, after watching a few things, I fell into a Nicolas Cage downward spiral, rabbit hole.
Awesome.
But it's like, I want to watch some Nicolas Cage stuff, because I'm like, this is actually fascinating when you think about it. Like, I've actually never thought he was much of like a ridiculous over-the-top actor. I've always like, I've seen him in a lot of films. He's just very, he's very identifiable. He's very just like, he's Nicolas Cage. But I've never had a problem with him or ever thought anything's like overly humorous of what he's doing. I don't feel like he's doing anything wrong. I don't think he's making a bad judgment error as an actor when he gets really worked up in a scene. I'm always like, it's appropriate. It's just like, it is out of context. It's kind of, it's very weird and funny. So I actually have always like, I was interesting to watch this. I was like, I kind of respect what's going on here. I want to watch some Nick Cage stuff.
Do it. You know? Do it. He's dive back into his earlier stuff. Like definitely check out Leaving Las Vegas. Adaptation is good. And man, he and don't forget The Ultimate Face Off,
right? And his Christmas movie Family Man.
That's right. Yeah.
What a great movie.
Anyways, let's wrap this up. What do you give A Quiet Place?
As far as thrillers go, I'd probably give this thing a 7.5.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's pretty fair.
Sure. Yeah. As far as thrillers go, I'm going to go 8.5. I really, really like this film. I can't fault it for much.
Yeah. I can't, as far as, again, like storytelling, character development, like I thought it was pretty good. There are just a couple of things that were obviously hang-ups for me, which we covered earlier. The daughter kind of taking a little too long. I guess there were just a couple of unbelievable components for me, even in a show, even a movie like this. There were some questions where I was like, okay, we're stretching there. So that's why I'm putting it in the 7.5 category. Sure. I think you can have a movie like this and not feel like it's stretching, even if though the fact of the matter is you're dealing with monsters that have extremely good hearing, and that's
all. But apparently no sense of smell.
Yeah. So how do they enjoy their food if they can't taste, smell? That's what I'm assuming anyways. I'm making too many assumptions. They could probably taste.
I don't know. Let's not get into that.
Yeah, they obviously aren't smelling anything. great stuff. Yep, 7.5.
Right. Okay, well, thank you once again, everyone, for listening. We'll be back next week with Wonder Woman. We're going to break that one down. You probably won't like it.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. Wow, it's going to be wonderful.
Ooh, nicely done.
Thanks, Dan.
You're welcome, John. All right, everybody. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. And don't forget, you can always write us at filmbuffschannel@gmail.com. You can follow us on Instagram @filmbuffs_. And don't forget, give us a rating on iTunes. A 5-star rating would be great. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.